Hi, my name is Bruce Baldwin. I'm founder of the Enterprise Engagement Alliance and the Purpose Leadership and Stakeholder Management Academy, and we're dedicated to promoting a strategic and systematic approach to management across the enterprise, much the way total quality management transformed to manufacturing in the last century. And so, as part of our education series, we like to feature CEOs who are actually at the front lines of purpose leadership, who are truly trying to create value for customers, employees, and their shareholders in a way that is sustainable over time. And we're very happy today to have Charlie. By the way, is it Charlie Maloof, or how do you pronounce it, Charlie? And he's president and CEO of Broad River Retail. They own 31, I believe, and more, another one to come, stores in the Southeast, Southeast USA. Most of you know the Ashley brand. Well, in that part of the country, his company is the Ashley brand. And he's had an incredible journey. And unfortunately, we're not going to have time in this show to get into all of it, but we'll expand on it in the article as well. But just to let everybody know what the Purpose Leadership Academy is, we're here to help organizations get to work and do the work. And a lot of our stuff is free, free media, libraries. There's a self-diagnostic index on our website, no obligation, completely anonymous. And then, of course, we have a complete learning program based on the principles of purpose leadership and stakeholder management and a whole bunch of other services. And finally, we like to thank all of the companies that we do business with, and we like to thank all of the Purpose sponsors. And I believe, Charlie, you're going to be a speaker at the upcoming Purpose Summit in North Carolina, I believe.
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to be speaking this year, but I am looking forward to interviewing several of the speakers for our podcast, Stories from the River.
Well, great. Well, we'll get a chance to talk about that, and I'm now going to stop the share here. A little bit of luck. We've done that. All right, Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us today. So first off, what led you to this? And I know it's a long story, so do your best to this conclusion that focusing on the interests of your employees and your customers strategically was better business.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Bruce. We got to meet and visit late last week, and it was a wonderful conversation. I feel like we're kindred spirits, and you live there in Hastings-on-Hudson, which is a great small town in New York, just above New York City. So I'm dialing in from our headquarters in Fort Mill, South Carolina, which is just across the border in the greater Charlotte area. Purpose leadership. I'm going to try to keep all my answers succinct and crisp for your audience. I think seeing what good looks like, seeing other companies, I think we've had the benefit of just this movement that's probably started around the conscious capitalism movement. And so you got like John Mackey and Whole Foods, you've got Kip Tindle in the Container Store, you've got Blake Mycoskie and Tom's Shoes, and doing good can be good business. And all of those ideas kind of percolating around 2013, 2014, really started to synthesize with some of my own beliefs. So that would probably be the early precursors of what led me to it.
But it's interesting because you were running a business for a whole number of years. Obviously good people, honest people, but you know, like most of us in business, at some stage you're going to run into some problems. So didn't this epiphany, in a way, come out of some challenges that you ran into,
Yeah,
or
no
did it?
question about. Well, we had to break all of our bones first to rediscover our purpose. So that's what happened. In 2015, we went through an ERP conversion that we had been planning for 2 or 3 years and preparing for. And then we did an acquisition, and then we were breaking ground on a brand new campus, which is, it was really big for us where I am today. We were, I would say, an above average company for 10, 12 years, and we're doing well, growing, moving along, had survived the Great Recession, which was really tough for us at retail, especially in the home furnishings, because home and credit all got really just crushed in, 08, 09, 2010. And we're rebuilding back from that. And then we broke all of our bones again, and much more severe and traumatic than 29, which was, you could see that coming, and it was like the air being let out. But this was really like falling off the roller coaster. And so we were not bound by what had always served us. And we said, okay, nothing's working. If we're going to build this thing back from the ground floor up. Let's build it the way we would have done if we were not shackled by the way we'd always done it before. So we broke all of our bones and they just grew back stronger. And eventually we developed a purpose statement. We started moving towards investing in our people, the spirit of a mutual spirit of abundance and mutual prosperity. And that just started building the accelerating the flywheel, building on itself and going from human resources to human capital, having career paths for everyone, doing things in a non-traditional way in a very traditional industry. And all those things started reverberating and cutting through the clutter. And it's really like we had no reason to survive in 2015. And all the probability and smart money and bets would have had us like going away. I mean, the vultures were circling. And the thing we like to kind of joke around about inside these four walls is, you know, they thought they had buried us, but little did they know we were seeds. And so we were seedlings that came from the you know, the spirit of purpose. And, you know, we started reading. I'll stop there unless you want me to keep going, Bruce.
Well, I do want you to keep going, but we're going to get to all of those things.
Okay.
Because it does seem to me what happened was around this time, you were doing a lot of soul searching and you started doing a lot of reading. And, you know, again, we spoke last week, so I can truncate some things here. And you conscious capitalism, and you mentioned a couple of other people. Also, you had mentioned in our last call, Costco. So I think the number one message we want to get across here, I think, or you, is that this is not virtue signaling. Mm-hmm. This isn't about, oh, I'm such a great guy and, oh, you know, worship me. No, this is actually better business. Because if I recall, you told me that this company has had its best years since you made this, had this epiphany, if you will. You had a good, your first 10 years, good business. You said better than average. You guys made money, blah, blah, blah. But it's been better since then. Is that the case?
Yeah, 100%, exponentially 1,000%. We have far exceeded what we even thought was the peak of what we could achieve in this business. There's a certain, if you want to measure profitability on EBITDA, there's a certain threshold that businesses like ours that run on thin margins and a lot of costs and fixed costs you can expect to do. And we've far exceeded those. And it's really, I think it's a grand experiment of the more you can invest back into your people and be a purpose-driven organization, how well can you really do? And if you look at our P&L stats against others or benchmarks in our industry, if you look at look at our selling expenses and our massive comp plans and comp programs and our average pay for those who are commission-based, we're going to be hundreds of basis points above the benchmark. In spite of that, in spite of our higher labor costs, our profitability has still grown. Our net promoter score has still grown. Our repeat customers, our average tickets, our conversion rates, our sales per guest. And then the amount that we're able to give in the community has grown and expanded. And so it's really been this amplified, truly grand experiment about the spirit of abundance and doing good can be good for business. And it's been just remarkable to watch. And yeah, it kind of took a while for the momentum to kind of start to get. I mean, we went from worst to first, so to speak, over a number of years. And so, 2016, we got back into profitability. 2017, we had tremendous impact. 2018, okay, now we're really churning. 2019, oh, wow, we're really churning. 2020, the pandemic hit. We thought we were going to be in trouble. And then once we got through the supply chain, 21 and 22 were just record-breaking, phenomenal years. And so the flywheel has continued to go. It's been really quite remarkable. But it's also been not a zero sum game. And by that, we've always said, like, we don't have to, our ecosystem needs to be healthy. Our customers don't have to lose. Our partners don't have to lose. We don't have to squeeze everyone down to lose for us to win. No, our partners have been successful. Our people have had tremendous success. And the community that we live and work and play in has been benefited from the fruits of our labor and the spoils that we've been able to share and share abundantly.
I'm going to stop you there.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that really, I chuckled at when I read some background about you, you raised your employees' pay right when you were having that, the business, you were having all sorts of problems with an implementation of an ERM system. It was a perfect storm, a bad, perhaps a bad acquisition. You were getting squeezed. And yet, when you had this epiphany, you increased your employees' pay and you changed their compensation plan. Now, and yet it took a couple of years for this to take hold, right? This is an instant, soup mix, right? In other words, and we saw this with Gary Ridge, when the CEO of WD-40, who I believe you know, a WD-40 company. And when you look at his financial performance, it didn't take off right away. It was, a little bit of a flat thing, and then all of a sudden, it was like a hockey stick. And boy, do I wish I'd bought his stock in 2020. So, did you have that same experience? It's not a hockey. It's kind of like a hockey stick if you're lucky. It's not an instantaneous financial success.
Well, yeah, and there's a so first of all, to answer your first question, yes, the first decision. So I got promoted to be president and CEO of this company. I was the managing partner and COO for 10 years or so, and in mid 2015, I got put into the president and CEO role. And so you're saying I was reading these things, having these epiphanies. The first decision that I made after we went on a listening tour and listen to what was the pulse at retail. The first decision was we're going to give all of our retail-based folks a raise. And if I was running a publicly held company with the state of where we were, I wouldn't have made it by the end of the day. They would have said that's the exact opposite of what you should do. But I wasn't shackled by Wall Street expectations. We like to say we're running this company, for the next quarter century, not the next quarter. And so we can take a really long-term aspect. And so we did what we thought was right and fair. And yeah, we started paying on a certain category that we never paid commission on, that traditionally isn't paid commission on in our industry. And
And what
yet
is that?
we're, what's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. What is that? What
Yeah,
is
okay.
the
Well,
annuity?
that's a whole other story. So delivery. Most people look at delivery as, hey, you're not trying to make money on delivery. And by that point, people were saying, don't even charge for delivery. The world's going to free delivery. That's what the customer expects. And we thought that if you go towards free delivery and you look at it just as a cost, see, our business in home furnishings is we're not dropping a box off at the door. And we said, it's actually not even delivery. It's really delivery, assembly, and service in her home. And Mrs. Jones or Mrs. Smith, if you're looking at it as like a low cost deal, you want to try to get the lowest cost provider or the lowest cost denominator. And we said, Mrs. Jones does not want the lowest common denominator in her home. She wants a premium delivery experience, and set the right way. And we would never have the lowest common denominator sales team, sales force in our stores. Why would we do that on our delivery fleet? So we actually also recruited motor carriers. And we paid them more and we got a new contract. So we actually paid our partners more. We got a more expensive contract that we'd never been willing to do. And we said, we want more of the money to go to the motor carriers who are going to be out there delivering the product. We're going to charge more. We're going to give a better service. And there's going to be enough abundance here that we're going to pay commission on this to our team so that they can participate in all of that. And so we'll give a better service. She'll be happier. That's ultimately what she wants. And when the world was calling for the retail apocalypse and free delivery and e-commerce was going to eat the world, that's when we changed our trajectory, went counterculture and went against the grain, stood in the gap and charged more for delivery, called it DASH, Delivery Assembly Service in Her Home, an acronym, branded it, elevated the service, paid more for the service. And so
So the
that's
focus
like
was
in a
on the
microcosm, that's our
experience.
story.
So the focus was on the experience. In other words, you elevated the. So instead of some guy or lady dropping off your box at the door, no, we're going to make this fun.
That's
We're going
right.
to bring. Where would you like it, sir or
That's
ma'am?
right.
Oh, does it not look good there? Maybe should you move it over here? So in
That's
other
right.
words, create value, and then you can charge for it, and you
That's
can
right.
reward your employees. Well, that leads me to my next question. A lot of people think of purpose leadership or this concept as sort of just being a nice guy, and having a good soul. But it really does take a system, doesn't it? You have 31 stores. You must have on average about, I would imagine, 20 employees per store, something like that. And they're part-time, full-time, this, that. What if you had to rattle off quickly, what kind of system do you need to bring everything together to put purpose leadership to work? You can't just throw hay in the air and make that happen.
Yeah, so First of all, it doesn't mean that you're going to be fluff about your business. You certainly have to be minded about your, you have to be intentional about everything that you do. And that includes your business metrics. But it doesn't mean that you divorce the heart of the matter from the math of the matter. So you can lead with your heart, but you got to supplement it. Stacy, our head coach, he calls it love and math. And so whether it's heart and head, love and math, it just means that it's infusing heart into the business and being intentional, authentic. But Bruce, we certainly pay attention to our metrics, right? We certainly want to be competitive. We want to, our vision statement is to be the premier Ashley store operator, or, you know, so we want to be premier. Premier is not like something, that's a lofty goal. It's aspirational. You can never be premier. You never arrive, and it acknowledges the greatness of others. But it means that you've got to infuse the heart. Like, why are you doing something? So if you say purpose is why you do something, and vision is like your where you're going, or you know, or in the mission statement is, you know, what you do to be an excellent home furnishings retailer for us. And then the core values are how you act and behave. All of those have to interlock and work together. But we've certainly got, you know, business processes and systems and KPIs and reports and things that, and the rhythm of retail, the rhythm of business, you know, and we have metrics to help us know if we're on track or not, right? We're looking at average compensation, engagement surveys, and how we're competing comp sales and year-over-year sales, and if we're executing on our strategies and things of that nature. But we really care about how our people are doing, how we're doing in our community. And so our purpose statement is furnishing life's best memories. And there's a period at the end of memories, but you could simply take the period off and assume it's for others or for other people. And then it's just, what's our paradigm? How do we want to define who the others are? We think of it as our others, our memory makers who work for us. You might call them team members or teammates or employees, but it's furnishing life's best memories for our memory makers, for their families, for the guests who we have the privilege of serving, for our partners, for our neighbors in our community. So it's really being mindful of not just the triple bottom line, but all stakeholders who come into contact with your business. I like how I heard Kip Tindall say at one time, being mindful of our organizational wake. And you can do that and take care of your people so well that they'll take care of the business. But you also have to be like, take some elements from like Jack Stack's The Great Game of Business, where you be transparent with your people. Most people want to be in a company that's growing and that's doing well. So be willing to share your financials and share your results to the extent that you can share them, and talk to them about what winning and losing looks like. And then watch them go to work to figure out if they feel trusted and feel heard and feel that they've got a purpose here. Watch them go help the business grow and thrive and prosper. It's an amazing thing.
But here's what's really interesting to me, because obviously you're a one man, right? You have a management team, mm-hmm. but you've got all these employees with all diverse backgrounds. And of course, your part of the country now is increasingly diverse. Mm-hmm. So you've got all the different cultures that you're dealing with. So one of the things that I always wonder, and then I see that companies that have like human resources, and they have marketing, and they have sales, and they have training. And, mm-hmm. and so much of it seems to be siloed and disconnected, right? It seems to me that isn't it critical to align your stakeholders, yeah. your customers and employees? And how do you do that? How do you make sure that the marketing's that what you're saying to customers, your employees know what the promise is and that they know how to deliver it? It sounds like that memories concept is really kind of your path. But if you could explain, how do you align and integrate all these activities toward a common purpose?
You're exactly right that it's a challenge. We actually did a study in 2019 when we were going into 2020, and we said, what could take us down? What could hurt us? And we said, you know what? It's being not cascading our culture, being disunited, not embracing our diversity. So we have this thing called Word of the Year. And so taking some of that context, we said our Word of the Year for 2020 was to be united. And we build programs around our Word of the Year, by the way. And so when the world kind of got scattershot and everyone went to remote offices and isolation, we wanted to be reunited because that was our Word of the Year in 2020. But also another phrase that we hang on is leadership is communication. And so there's all kinds of ways that you can communicate, Bruce. And when you're in a foxhole, sometimes you have to communicate a whole lot more, and you have to be a lot more active and more frequent. During COVID, during 2015, the story I told you about, we were actively communicating all the time, but now it's more in a stable course of business. But we'll do quarterly town halls, weekly newsletters, company intranet, any kind of avenue, and then weekly one-on-ones, leadership meetings, offsites together, company events where you can have shared memories, shared experiences. But there's all kinds of different ways, whether it's phone call, in-person visits, in-person celebrations, recognition. There's all kinds of ways to celebrate and unify. But there's certain corporate themes that we cascade out corporately and unify our folks around. And so, for instance, during the Word of the Year Connect, we'll build a logo around it. We'll send coffee mugs and swag and t-shirts and pens and puzzles to put together the puzzle pieces together, and how we're going to build programs around connecting this year. So we just try to really be intentional about how we build programs around the year and make sure that we do maintain what we think is a really special culture.
One of the things that we're doing as part of our work with Purpose Point and the Purpose Summit is creating a handbook for purpose leadership. In other words, kind of a toolkit. What is purpose leadership? And if you think of it, purpose leadership, it really is a new paradigm for leaders, which is why, Charlie, we have you on the show, and you were recommended by others. By the way, I didn't just pick you out of a hat. And so I was going to ask you, in the advertising world, there's a whole bunch of tools that we use, right? Or in marketing, there's a whole bunch of tools. Well, I think in purpose leadership, there's a bunch of tools that are different, right? And so I'm going to kind of rattle them off and tell me if I'm wrong, because you're giving me a little bit of insight into what we can include in this purpose leadership handbook. Okay, so it would seem to me number one thing is engagement survey, and I'm going to rattle them off. Or if you want, what would you say are the key tools? If you kind of, you've probably never given it thought, so I didn't want to put you on the spot. But if you had to kind of give tools, give some thought to it. What would be the tools of a purpose leader to understand your employees and your customers and to actually implement all of this thing? Like advertising, we use print ads, digital ads. Have you given any thought to that? Or I can rattle off some things and you can talk.
Well, I'm you've piqued my interest. I mean, I think that shared learning. So, and how do we learn together? So right now we're going through leadership development together. We've got a certain group that we've enlisted. So shared learning, and you could also learn by reading articles, books, listening to podcasts, things of that nature. And so we did, like, during our year of purpose, we formed a purpose activation committee, and we got together every single week, and we did various events. We even, at one of them, we hosted a purpose summit. We attended other purpose summits. But we also did weekly readings and did book club. And then we would get together and talk about, like, what do you think about this chapter? And there's a lot of great content out there. So I think that when you're talking about, like, the tools, you gotta learn, because no one, like, comes into business and says, I got all the answers. So you need to learn from some of the emerging science and data and who's doing it well. And then data, you always need good data. So an engagement survey is a great point on look at read case studies. Read other companies. We learn from others we who are doing it well. And so none of us have to start at zero. You stand on the shoulders of giants. So engagement surveys, pulse surveys, other feedback mechanisms. So I think learning together, leadership development, working on projects, initiatives together. I think a recognition
Communications, you mentioned communications,
Communication is a
multimedia.
huge one. I think that a recognition culture is really important. And there's several books I could recommend, but those would be some of the ones that I would say.
Well, let me throw out a few more. Because again, we're going to be assembling and you're helping to assemble this toolkit, right? What would you need? And I agree with everything you've said off the rewards and recognition properly done. As you know, those can really be destructive unless properly done. But then also issues like analytics. You mentioned analytics, innovation, getting employees involved, as it sounds like you do, in for continuous improvement. And I love the fact that you were able to rattle off metrics. You early on, I have this recorded, sir. I loved the fact that you, right off the bat, could mention seven different metrics that involved your employees and your customers. So my question is, are those metrics shared with your stakeholders, with your employees, a lot
Oh,
of those metrics?
yeah, 100%. I mentioned transparency, and so it's interesting, Bruce, because we'll go to other companies that have like a lot of retail stores, and what will they do differently than us? Maybe we'll give each of our stores a nickname and an identity. We say purpose begins with identity, and but guess what? That doesn't come top down. It comes bottom up. The GM of the store and their team get to select their own identity, and then we'll craft and design a logo for them based off of the inputs that they give us of what the syntax, what the meaning is behind it. So it's not like store 123 or store 444. It's got a name and a logo and an identity and some pride behind it, and so that's one of the things that we do. What would be another thing that other stores do? They don't know how all the other stores in the region are doing. All of ours are shared. Now, there's a risk in doing that. Someone could take our data, and maybe a disgruntled person or someone could not have honest intentions with that and could share it. But we err on the side of transparency and trusting and being honest with our folks. And so it's always a level playing field of just dozens and dozens of metrics, but they're shared. And we even have a day of the week called Truth Tuesday. We say we're going to share our week is Tuesday through Monday. And so on Tuesdays, we're looking at all the same stats. We're going to tell the truth and see how we did, see what we can do to get better. So every day of the week is themed. So these would be some of the things that we're super transparent and open and honest. And we're not trying to hoard information. And by the way, when we have to cut back, they already know because they see how we're doing. Or when we have more to give, they understand because they've seen how they've helped the company grow and thrive and succeed. And I think that love is acting in the long-term best interest of another. And that's not a Charlie original quote. I picked that up along the way. And so over time, they'll come along the way, but they might be skeptical at first, but as they continue to watch you make your decisions, they're going to see if you're making those decisions for them or against them, or with them or against them. Are you making it from a selfish or a selfless standpoint? Or are we all in this together? And so I just say over a long period of time, watch us, watch our decisions, and watch the consistency of our decisions and our actions. And I like to say, and you interviewed Gary Ridge, and so he said that he really likes this. Culture can it's not a microwave mentality. It's a crockpot mentality. And so it can be eroded overnight, but it can't be built overnight. It's a slow simmer, a slow cooker that you build trust slowly but surely over time. And so when you treat people like human beings, like people, and you enroll them in the decision making, and innovation, you mentioned that earlier, is one of our core values, one of our five core values. And having a spirit of always trying to improve and get better, but doing it with your people and for your people. The better we've treated our people, the better we've performed as a company.
Well, it's so interesting that the trouble with using this term purpose leadership is then it's sort of like sets us up for, oh, again, we're perfect, people aren't going to get hurt. And the answer is no. I'm sorry. Business is really war. It is. Anyone who's ever run a business, and you know what? The stakes are pretty high. You don't get killed, but you can certainly have a heart attack and you can be miserable. So the stakes are high, but people don't realize you do. There are trade-offs. Sometimes people have to be laid off or the others won't have jobs. So isn't the per and this to me is one of the core messages. Having a clear purpose is what helps explain trade-offs. So yes, we had to do this, but you saw the numbers. What would you have done if you were in our shoes? I remember Airbnb during the Great Recession. I mean, pardon me, during the COVID, they had to lay off enormous amounts of people. Gary Ridge at WD-40 during the Great Recession, he was able not to do that and with tremendous benefit. But getting back to my point and my question to you, isn't purpose the only way that you can navigate trade-offs and keep trust? Because if people don't know how you're making decisions, they don't know whose interests you're really considering.
Is it the only way? I don't know of another way to do it. I haven't contemplated, like, could another way also work? But what I would tell you is we could even take the topic of layoffs. And I know Simon Sinek has a point of view of this, like that you should never do layoffs. And I'm not here to judge any other company, but every situation is unique and the parameters of how you make those decisions. And so for our business, we have been able to avoid layoffs, but we try to adopt a mantra where we're not going to get out over our skis. I mean, that might be where in certain cases, someone might say, well, we need someone else to do this. And we might ask the question, can we be more resourceful before we add more resources? Because so-and-so can leave the company, but I have to live with the results. And if we go and overhire or live outside of our harvest or get out over our skis, then we're not prepared. Our business hasn't been stress tested, or we're not prepared for a downturn. So, but when we've been at our worst and at our weakest, we've done the most for our people. And we just said, look, just remember that goodwill. We might need to call you up on it someday. I think that it's the lens through that, it's really important for us to think really long term. And so since we want to be in this business for a really long term, we're not trying to just make the next quarter. And so we want to be very careful about hiring and firing and protecting the culture long term. And so every decision we make is through the lens of how it's going to affect someone and their job. And we understand if there's a layoff, gosh, that doesn't just hurt that person. That hurts, their family and what they have to deal with as well. And did we not do a good job? So we've been able to avoid that mass layoffs, from our company. And it's not because we haven't had trials and tribulations. 100% we have. We've been in the ditch. We've been out there, but it's just the way we've tried to run the business to be very budget minded. And, and look, we don't have, investors and Wall Street we're trying to answer to, but that gives us some latitude and freedom to kind of run the business that we think is in the best long-term interest.
So this sounds wonderful. And why aren't, let me ask you this. I asked Gary and Davin Salvagno, who is the founder or co-founder of Purpose Point and the Purpose Summit. I asked both of them, how many CEOs do you think could honestly be described as what percentage? And Gary's a very humble man, and Davin is as well. But I didn't get the impression that either of them think this is the majority of leadership. Do you think that, you remember the Jack Welch paradigm, not to, obviously beseech a man who did a lot of good work and who's dead, but that was a paradigm of leadership that I think many would now believe didn't create value. It destroyed value, or it was. Why do you think this is a prevalent? Am I wrong, or is this a, or are you kind of a minority?
That's a tough question for me to answer.
But
I
wait
would
a
like it
minute.
to
You
be more,
shop,
I would
you
like it to,
fly, you do business with a lot of companies. How good is customer service today, if you really think about it? I mean, is it very good?
Bruce, I know other companies struggle with turnover and we our turnover stats have been as low and our retention has been as high as it's ever been. So maybe we're doing something right on our engagement survey participation is really high. By no means does that mean that we don't have our own warts and our own issues. We absolutely do. We're just not trying to hide them and we're not trying to pretend that they don't exist. We get up every day saying, how can we make the company better? How can we improve on what we need to improve on? And feedback is a gift. We want to kind of be that proverbial city on a hill that others can look up to, not just in our own industry or not just in our own community, but to share it back. We've learned from others who've been great leaders and purposeful leaders, and we'd love to kind of share that back out there with others in business. And if they can take something positive from what we do, then that's great. And
Well, I
Chase.
love your humility, and I'm cutting you off only because you've been generous with your time and running over. So I'm going to ask you one last question. If every company in the United States was run like WD-40 was, at least under Gary's, I don't know the new people, the new CEO, or like yours, if every company was run that way, do you think that so many people in America would be unhappy right now? We blame our politicians for all the unhappiness. But you know what? We spend most of our lives, as Davin likes to point, at work. And I don't lose sleep on Sunday nights over presidential politics. I don't know about you, not often.
I don't
But
either.
people lose sleep on Sunday nights because of their jobs.
Well, there's a great Gary's books are great on this topic, and there's another book called Everybody Matters by Bob Chapman. And Bob said he had an epiphany when he was sitting in church. He goes, "You know, I'm sitting in church, and my pastor, my preacher, gets me 1 hour a week. And you know what? We get our employees 40 hours a week, you know, to motivate them to, you know." And so what you're asking me is, can the market, does the marketplace matter? And do how we treat people at work affect how they go home, how they treat their partners, their spouses, their kids? And so, yeah, I believe there's a positive ripple effect there. So do I think that we can make the world a better place by improving people's fulfillment and happiness by how we treat others at work? Absolutely. Do I think it's the I mean, that's the moonshot goal, right? That's the Aaron Hirsch once time put a moonshot 20 purpose 2030 goal that he could flip the Gallup 80% disgruntled to 20% disgruntled and 80% happy at work. And what would the world look like? It probably would be less divisive and less angry and less polarized and less unhappy. That'd be a great thing to do. So yeah, I love the quote, just try to leave the world a little bit better than you found it. And so with the opportunities that you've been given, gifted, and granted. And so that's what we're trying to do, is push the ball a little bit further. So the next generation will have their own problems and will come after us. But while we have the chance to steward the business, we think of it as stewardship and try to steward it as best we possibly can. And we've had some success, and that's gives us more responsibility to how we treat each other and other people, and the world would be better if other companies were, I guess, like that.
Well, Charlie, that's going to what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. I can actually say that I don't have to work anymore, and the reason I work is that what gives me joy is, heck, maybe someday people won't all be miserable going to work. Maybe, because you proved it. It's better business. If it cost you money, if it took money out of the shareholders' pockets, if it caused disruption, okay, I get it. We'll have everybody be miserable. But since having everybody be happy seems to be good for business if you do it right,
That's right.
it's a worthy cause. And thank you for being part of this mission. Thank you for sharing your time today, Charlie. Terrific interview, I think. And we'll be promoting this show this coming week in an article on Thursday in our e-media. Thanks again.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for the work that you're doing and what you're committing your life to. It makes a difference. So appreciate you.
Oh, well, thank you. And just bear with me one second.